Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everybody. Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Chicago, Illinois. In today's segment, we will be talking with Mr. Chase Norlin, the founder of eSure.ai. It's a next-generation cybersecurity insurance platform, which protects both consumer and the small businesses from any type or kind of cyber attack. Chase, thanks for your time, and let's go and get started, please.
Thanks, Ravi. Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for coming up on the podcast. So, tell us some of the highlights of your career. How did you get started in where you're at right now? And tell us some of the milestones in your path.
Yeah, well, I've been a tech entrepreneur basically my whole business life. Have some infamous claims to fame, having started the first YouTube about 5 years before YouTube. But prior to this, built one of the internet's largest video advertising networks. We grew pretty fast, and then out of that came the current company, which is called Transmosis. This is where eSure came from. Transmosis is a leader in training cybersecurity analysts, and it was through training cybersecurity analysts that we discovered this big gap in the market where we believe, and it's so far proven true, that micro businesses and consumers have now become the number one target for cyber attack today, which is why we built this product.
Okay. Are there any other reasons why you created this product other than the SMB and the consumer market? Were there any other motivating factors behind it? Or?
Well, of course, the passion, of course, is to protect people. That's what this is all about.
Right.
What had been missing really in the markets were no one had really figured – the cybersecurity market is quite a large market, and those two markets, the micro business and consumer markets, have been dramatically overlooked because cybersecurity companies want to sell their products to larger businesses. So they've essentially have looked over or buy and, you know, have left behind all these micro businesses and consumers, and consumers in particular are really vulnerable now, home users. The state of the art until we came along, is the consumer antivirus, Norton and McAfee, which great companies, but technology that's incredibly antiquated.
Okay. Now, why are the consumer and small businesses number one target? I mean, I have my insight into that too, but I want to know what you think first.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different reasons for that. Kind of from a big picture perspective, the cyber criminal groups or cyber criminality, if you will, has really matured over the years. And so what that means is that the old days, like, oh, there's a lone hacker in a basement that's attacking, Bank of America's websites. Those days are basically over. Now it's organized criminal groups, cyber criminal groups going into offices, literally. They've got software, they've got deadlines and things like that. Even things like ransomware as a service is now a reality, which is pretty scary. So these groups have become more organized. And while that happened, the industry, like I said, has been focusing on selling their software, cybersecurity software, to larger enterprises. So what's happened essentially is larger companies have become better defended against cyber attack, although there's still breaches, as you know. It's harder to penetrate those larger company networks, which means these organized cyber criminal groups are making their way down the food chain. And the sweetest spot in that food chain now is our micro businesses, which we define as companies with under 50 employees, and consumers or home users themselves.
Okay. Yeah, I've got another division of my company, which I just launched 2 or 3 years ago, and I got a business partner. We've tried marketing the SMB community here in the western and the northwest suburbs of Chicago, and we've had some major obstacles with that. I think the biggest one about SMB owners is that they say that, they don't have enough budget for, big name, for like enterprise-wide security solutions.
Yeah.
And the second thing we've been finding, which is even scarier, is that they think that, well, if we haven't been hit, we never will be hit, so why should we protect ourselves?
Yeah.
What we've been telling them, that if you get hit, you know, you could lose your business. And the cost of being a little bit defensive right now will far, you know, pay dividends in the long run than being hit, you know what I mean? So that still hasn't worked either. We're still trying to find some of those pain points.
That's a really good observation, actually. I can address that because we've dealt with that how we sell our eSure small micro business product through distributors and a channel to smaller micro businesses like you were talking about. And that's true. So what we've learned there is that these small business owners, like you said, they don't think it's going to happen to them, which is crazy. And then also they're not technically savvy, let alone savvy around cybersecurity technology. So selling technology to them is very difficult. So this is exactly why we built a service that's really designed where the core of it is a cyber insurance product. So it looks and acts more like cyber insurance with the technology that's bundled and attached to it, which is we're really one of the only companies out there doing that. That's a huge thing because what it means is that the technology is pre-approved by the big insurance companies sitting behind us. That's a very big deal now because small business owners, you know, they understand liability and insurance a lot better than they understand cybersecurity technology. So we position it more as an insurance product, which it is, and that's more easily understood and obviously more easily digestible in terms of spending budget. Everyone knows they need more insurance.
Oh, wow. That's a very unique way of – I never thought of that before. Wow. Thanks for that insight. But now let's move in talking about that. Let's talk a little bit about cybersecurity insurance. I've written a whole book on that. I've written for some clients a lot of white papers and blogs on this. And cybersecurity insurance is not the same – it's not as easy as getting, like, car insurance or even health insurance. It's a lot more complicated. And I know that the insurance carriers have now really made it hard for – the SMBs to get a policy, and even then, if they get it and if they want to file a claim, they make life even harder. So tell us about all your insights into that and tell us about first and third party cyber liability and how that all works together.
Yeah, in fact, that's exactly why we built this solution with which the description, the way you just described it right there. Over the last year, it has become increasingly difficult. First of all, these small micro businesses, they're the number one target for cyber attack today, like I said, making it much more difficult for them to get approved for classic cyber liability insurance, these million-dollar cyber liability insurance policies. So it's just getting more difficult to get approved for that today. And if you are approved, premiums are, of course, have increased, so it's expensive. But it's increasingly very important. If you think about like small law firms and accounting firms, et cetera, that financial services firms, they have lots of very sensitive information that could be. They have tons of liability, which we'll talk about that first and third party liability. They carry tremendous amounts of financial liability that they're not aware of today, just by operating digitally. So what that means is that. On the insurance side, if you were to go out and do that to try to get cyber insurance for your, say, small law firm, the insurers view that as risky because there's very valuable data that cyber criminals are going after at these law firms, accounting firms, et cetera, financial services, et cetera. So, A, it's hard to get approved, and B, if you are approved, premiums are way up. So you could expect, depending upon the nature of your small business, you could expect anywhere from, say, $10,000 to $15,000 a year in cyber insurance premiums. That's pretty expensive. You're talking over $1,000 a month. So, we've been observing all that. What we did was, like I said, we went out, took a security platform that's typically designed or sold to larger enterprises, meaning enterprise class endpoint security, along with a 24/7 security operations center. And we have human security analysts protecting businesses. That's a configuration you would typically only see today in a larger enterprise. We took that to the major insurers and said, we're going to roll this out to micro businesses, and that's going to significantly reduce your claim risk, which they agreed with. So what that means now is that once our customers or micro business owners install our software and all their patches are updated, which we help with, then we can basically instantaneously activate $1 million of liability protection. That's a huge benefit, like I said. So it's an instantaneous approval. And also the cost of our platform combined, you know, with the technology is actually cyber than a standalone cyber insurance policy, which is pretty amazing. And also very important to note that everyone's like selling these cyber insurance policies. It's not clear even what you're getting sometimes. So there's so many carve outs right. in these insurance policies. So it's not entirely clear that even if you go after to get a policy like that, that you're even going to get paid out on a claim. That's another benefit of our platform right. is that our technology is pre-approved by the insurer. So the insurer already has knows all the technology, has already kind of thought all that through and pre-approved that. So the likelihood of claims being paid out through us is significantly higher than a standalone insurance policy where you're cobbling together some technology and hoping that the insurer is going to pay that claim if there's a breach.
Okay. Now, can you walk us through the process? Suppose you have client John Doe or company XYZ, and they get hit with a security breach. Walk us through the process, like on a high level, how they would file a claim through you and then get the pay up mm-hmm. to the insurance company.
Yeah, we built some really unique technology around that, which is pretty cool. So first off, what has to happen in terms of the compliance for our insurers is we're running an EDR platform, which is called Endpoint Detection and Response. So it's a big business enterprise class protection platform for endpoints. It's very important to understand the importance of endpoints because endpoints basically means desktop, laptop, servers. It usually means typically a desktop or a laptop with a remote worker. So this is where the majority of the financial liability lives for businesses because they're employees. You know, there's access to the network. You could be working from home. There's sensitive data on that endpoint or on that computer. And so the key here is to the number one thing we recommend doing, whether they use our service or not, is to lock down those endpoints. So what we lock that down with this next generation EDR platform, which essentially means it's what we call an XDR, it's AI and machine learning driven platform. Once that is installed on all the machines in the organization, then our security operations center is activated. So you have a live human intelligence, SOC team that's watching for all these alerts and then acting upon that, destroying and stopping these threats, preventing spread across the network, et cetera. And we are the SOC team, so that's what gives us some really unique advantages in terms of claims if there is one. We have not had one yet, which is great. So what that means is from a claim perspective, if there were one, we are the SOC team. So it's our software, of course, sitting on the machines. So we're seeing all the nature of the potential breach and what happened there. And all that, we're storing and collecting all that data. And what we've done is we've built on the back end a really unique software platform for something I didn't know, which is pretty interesting, is one of the biggest hurdles in getting a claim paid, a cyber insurance claim paid, is the actual verification of the breach or the cyber attack. Sometimes it's very hard to actually verify that it even happened in the first place, which is really crazy. I didn't even know that before we got into this.
Wow.
Yeah. So what we've done is we've built blockchain technology, a secure communications platform that pushes the data up. If there were a breach, it pushes since we are the data collector, we are the software, it pushes the data associated with that breach or that cyber attack, instantaneously and securely upstream to the insurer. So they essentially immediately have confirmation that it was a breach and can confirm that, which is why we're able to basically say that we can pay claims, essentially faster than other cyber insurance offerings.
Wow, that's pretty cool. You're the first cyber vendor that I've heard of or even know of that's doing this kind of thing, so my hat's off to you on that. Can you tell us a little bit more about the solution you have, the eSecure.ai? Just tell us more about that, Transmosis One. And is this available on-prem, or is it hosted somewhere, or can be in both kinds of platforms? Can you give a little bit more details about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we did some official launches today, which I'll tell you about. So it was called Transmosis One. We just rebranded it to esure.ai. That's E-S-U-R-E.ai. And essentially, it's a fully automated solution for protecting micro-businesses from cyber attack. And consumers now. We're launching the first consumer product. It was announced today, as a matter of fact. So it's good timing to do this podcast. We're very excited about the consumer product, which I'll tell you more about. So essentially what we've done is I think we're the first company not just doing the cyber insurance with the way I just described it, all in one, but we're also the first company to bring this enterprise class protection to this small micro-business market and the consumer market in a point-and-click fashion. Because these platforms were not designed, you know, these enterprise software platforms were not designed for micro businesses or for consumer, you know, point and click consumption. So if you go to esure.ai and you're a micro business or you're a consumer, you can literally now point, click, purchase, and download and install that product and be insured within a matter of minutes, which is pretty amazing.
Wow, cool. Okay.
Yeah, and so I think the other big news we had today was that we took that same platform, and we recognized that, you know, consumers are under tremendous cyber attack today as well, for the reasons I described earlier in the show. And the state of the art has not changed in years. You know, the state of the art in protecting consumers is very antiquated. It's antivirus and it's identity theft. You see it everywhere. You see identity theft commercials all the time. That is an older product that's been around forever, very much a commodity. It's not really a pure insurance solution. It just protects against identity theft. So we believe that a lot of consumers falsely think or falsely believe that their identity, if they're buying identity theft, that they're actually being insured, you know, if they're getting like an insurance policy, which they are not. Because they're getting identity theft insurance, which is just for identity theft, which is essentially everybody's identity theft has been stolen. If you think about it today, if you look at the dark web, anyone listening to the show, their identity has already been stolen through all these massive consumer data breaches that have happened over the last few years. It's still nonetheless important, but it's very antiquated. And so the state of the art in protecting consumers or remote workers in the home has not changed in years. So we thought that was ridiculous. And the home is very vulnerable. You're talking wireless routers that have very little security protection on them, you know, wireless refrigerators. There's so many ways now for a cyber criminal to attack the endpoint, which is where all these, your financial liability lives on your computer, get access to your online bank passwords, access to your business network and hold your business ransom, you know, et cetera, coming in through a wireless fridge, a wireless toaster, whatever, through the wireless router. Incredibly insecure. So we thought that was totally ridiculous. And we're just launched today the first enterprise product for the consumer market, same model, all-in-one enterprise protection for the home user with this enterprise endpoint security technology, a 24/7 security operations center watching out over the home, and $1 million of actual cyber insurance for the home. We do include identity theft too. But it's not just identity theft, it's actual cyber insurance. So we will literally pay ransoms in the home, or if you wire funds to the wrong people, we're reimbursed for that, all the things you would see in a classic cyber insurance policy, including online shopping fraud as well. We will pay for that.
Wow. I know your website right now looks awesome. Can you tell us more about the pricing points of esure.ai? How affordable is it to consumers and small businesses?
Yeah, you know, we've designed it to be the whole idea. That was the reason, one of the problems we really set out to solve, because in a small business market, even if you wanted to protect yourself with an enterprise XDR, you know, an endpoint security platform and a SOC, it's of course very expensive, but it's priced. First of all, they don't even sell it to you. And also it's priced out of reach for most small businesses, certainly for consumers. So we normalized that, and we also changed the way it's sold to small businesses. So we're the first ever also to bring this in a no-contract monthly subscription model. Normally you have to sign up for a multi-year contract, you know, with X amount of you know, financial commitment. You know, they're looking for six-figure deals for small businesses, which they can't afford. So we bring that to them in a monthly subscription model. You know, between consumers and businesses, our average price per month comes to around $20 to $30 per computer per month, all in, everything included. No extra fees, no setup fees. That includes the XDR, the SOC, and the $1 million of cyber insurance.
Wow, that's very affordable. Wow. Okay. Now, how do you manage the sales of this new solution? Do you rely on like channel partners or vendors, or you sell directly to the EMS market?
Yeah, good question, Robbie. So in the small business market, we're sold right now primarily through channel distributors, which is how a lot of these products are sold, of course. Well, we've got some great channel distributors out there. Those of you listening that know them or are interested in our service can get it through them, through Jenny, through Intellisys, which is part of ScanSource, and Telaris. We're expanding that roster all the time. And then among consumers, on the consumer side, we're the first company to bring this enterprise class protection directly to the consumer market in a point-and-click purchase fashion, which is what we launched today. You can read about all over our site. So you can purchase that enterprise class protection for your home. $1 million of cyber insurance comes with that to protect you and your home, or if your kids are home and they click on the wrong link late at night, and you know, now they sent malware to the home network, and now they're on dad's computer and dad works in a sensitive job, and you know, you've got all kinds of liability sitting in the home now. So now we can protect them. We can protect all these home users now with an actual $1 million blanket cyber insurance policy, which didn't exist before. All that really existed in the market before was, as you know, identity theft protection.
Excellent. Wow, I'm really excited about this. Wow, this is really a up-and-coming cutting-edge solution. Well, do you have any customer success stories that you can share with us on a non-confidential basis?
Well, we have some on our website, some case studies and stuff like that. We've been selling. So how we got into this? We launched our micro small business product in the market last year in the channel. That's been growing. So we just rebranded to eShare today. So we got lots of customers in many different small business categories. Like I said, from law firms, accounting firms, doctor's offices, dentist offices, financial services, kind of runs the whole gamut, you know, design firms, sole proprietorships, you know, work from home people. Lots of good stories there as it relates to protecting them from cyber attack. I think maybe the main case study here is that we haven't had a claim yet, which is great. The consumer product really just launched today. That's taken a couple of years to launch and build. We're very excited about getting that out of the market today. Those of you that are concerned about your, we didn't talk about, you asked a previous question about liability, and we should talk about that as well, first and third party liability. One thing that a lot of most small business owners and home users are not aware of is the liability that they now carry, literally just right. as a result of being online. You know, I'm not talking about your identity being stolen, you know, or going. You know, we're not talking about identity theft here. We're talking about all the new types of liability that exist for small businesses and consumers purely as a result of the world going digital in the last 10 years, essentially. We break that liability into two big buckets. First, the first category we call first-party liability. So first-party liability is you are directly attacked. So think like if you're a small business owner, even a home user, you're directly attacked. More liability there for the small business owner. Your business is now down, locked down. You may have to pay a ransom. If you are ransomed, you will likely have to pay that. Those are in the six figures. You've got reputational damage that comes as a result of that, because these are now extortion attacks now. So not only do you have to pay the ransom, but you know, if you don't pay it, they release all the information about your customers. So now all your customers know that you were hacked. So you've got significant reputational damage, all from this first-party liability. That's from a direct attack. Business downtime, you know, revenue loss associated with all that. Third-party liability is where you're breached, you're a small business, you've got partners in your database, other partners are affected by the attack, which is very common, customers, distributors, whoever it may be, or even data from your who your customers are breached online. All of that means third-party liability, which means you can now be sued. You've got significant legal expenses you're going to have to carry to defend yourself. There could be a legal settlement or a claim against you that needs to be paid. That's all the third-party liability. And these privacy acts are really stringent now. So if you're a small business operating in Arkansas and you've got customers that are from New York or California and your data is breached online and those states find out about it, which they will, there will now be not just lawsuits, but because there's regulatory fines you have to pay for breaching their privacy acts of their residents. That's in the multi-six figure as well. So that's third-party liability.
Right, well,
when you add all that up, that first and third-party liability, you approach like seven figures of liability, which is why the stats say 60% of small businesses go out of business within 6 months after a breach. It's because of all this first and third-party liability. So that's why we designed our insurance product to pay out and back up against both of those types of liability. So we'll pay ransoms, literally, third-party lawsuits, third-party legal settlements, even compliance failure fines we will pay as well.
Wow, okay. Well, in that regard, I mean, I'm talking about ransomware. Do you recommend clients to pay the ransom or not pay it? What are your viewpoints on that?
Yeah, there's so many schools of thought on that. The general theme that we've seen is if you're ransomed, the general rule of thumb that's recommended is, depending upon who's ransoming you, of course, there's some new rules coming down the pike related to, you know, foreign nations and things like that, you know, sending funding to terrorist groups and enemies of the state. The general rule of thumb is that you have to pay the ransom in order to kind of restore operations. That's kind of the, one of the general rules of thumb. So you want to assume that you're going to have to pay it. This is what a lot of business owners just don't realize. And, you know, it can get very – and if you don't pay it, it gets really bad. So you're going to lose half your customer base. Maybe very hard to stay in business. You're going to be down the whole time. You're not going to be able to do business, obviously. You're going to have a personal liability there depending upon the data that the hackers have secured. So that's why we focus around thinking about insurance more and the technology to make sure that you don't have a claim.
Wow, okay. Now, is it true that it can be actually considered an act of treason if you pay a ransom to like a nation state actor, the cyber attack originates there?
There's a bunch of new talk going on now, I think in D.C. around setting up rules or regulations related not paying ransoms to nation state actors in cyber criminal groups related to terrorist organizations where that funding could go to obviously wreak more havoc. I don't think any of those rules have passed yet. I think there's maybe some bills that are in the process of being formed to do that where you would not be allowed to pay the ransom. But generally speaking, it's very difficult to get out of not paying the ransom, especially if you're relying on, you know, to be online to operate, especially companies like that.
Now, segueing over to the overall cyber threat landscape, just a couple of things, and I'd kind of like to get your ideas on. It's this thing called artificial intelligence and machine learning. Now, there's really nothing new about it. It's been in the evolution since the 1950s, but of course, it caught really, you know, the biggest fire, you know, after, you know, ChatGPT came out. When was it, late last fall or winter? What are your thoughts on AI and ML? Is it going to be like Big Brother watching? Is it going to be the end of all society where it's going to replace the workers and this and that? Is it all the boom? Or what are your thoughts on that?
Good question. Yeah, I can speak to it as it relates to cybersecurity because our platform is actually AI machine learning driven EDR platform, which is termed for that as XDR today, or extended detection and response. So what's really amazing I'm very positive on it. if you look at the innovations around AI and machine learning in cybersecurity technologies, and in particular endpoint protection, I think we're the only company bringing in this AI machine learning XDR platform to these small business and consumer markets, because typically it's very expensive and reserved for these bigger companies. The innovations there are really amazing, meaning that with these endpoint security platforms in the past, they were historically monitoring and alerting systems. So, you know, they're going to find, like an antivirus, they're going to find all these problems, and they're going to send the alerts to a security team. So somebody has to do something. Somebody has to act upon those alerts. With AI and machine learning, what that means now is some of these AI platforms like ours, what that means is that the AI engine, the machine learning engine, it's, of course, doing all the monitoring and alerting like I described. Those alerts feed into itself. It's able to actually take its own actions and prevent threats before they spread on their own, you know, through its own AI capabilities, which is pretty cool.
Excellent. Yeah, I've got my viewpoints about AI. I think it's definitely an overused term here in cybersecurity. I think a lot of cyber vendors, they like to hype that up, you know, in order to get new prospects and customers. But in my view, I think AI is it's not going to replace anything. I think it's going to be used mostly for, like, you know, adding to existing processes, and, you know, automation, you know, augmentation, that kind of thing. So that with AI and ML. But it's not.
Yeah, I want to add something to that, too, is that something to add to that is it's not like AI is just going to replace everybody's jobs, especially in cybersecurity. There's been some good research and recent data to support the growing importance of security teams. That's why our parent company trains security analysts for a living. Like I said in the beginning, that's how we got into this. So it's the marriage of AI and these enterprise security platforms with human intelligence, or HI, where they're trained on the AI, and it's the combination of the two that really makes an extremely powerful security platform.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, because I think a lot of people are fearful it's going to replace the human brain. But I'll tell you one thing. My dad was a professor at Purdue down in West Lafayette, and he was in spinal cord regeneration research, one of the leading neuroscientists at the time. He was trying to discover ways of how to make paraplegics, you know, who've been, like, injured in a car accident, and try to help them, you know, use their arms or legs again. I think he was on the verge of some kind of breakthrough right before he died of a heart attack. But we had conversations with his family, and he was saying that we will never understand the human brain. At most, it'll be like being 0.0005% that we really fully understand it. And it's not like, you know, you can do a brain transplant, take out a brain, put a new one in, like you can with a heart. That will never happen. So I just remember having those conversations. So when people ask me about that, and I said, well, it's never going to replace the human brain, and it never will. It just can't. So anyway, so the next one I kind of want to hit on is the Internet of Things. You know, that's basically where everything's all wired together. I mean, I've seen smart cars. I mean, I've got a friend who claps his hand, his car backs out. You know, I'm old-fashioned. I hate technology, to be honest. I only have maybe just two mobile apps on my iPhone, you know, just for, like, email and, like, Google Maps. But I find the whole proposition to be scary. You know, everything's all connected, you know. Like, you're driving a car, if one thing breaks down, the whole thing's going to break down in a cataclysmic chain of events. So, like, yeah. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Do you have a smart home or a smart car or anything like that? Or?
Oh, yeah. I'm, like, a huge fan of that stuff. That's, in fact, ironically, that's one of the reasons we built this platform, because we've got so many security holes now in the home through these smart homes, these IoT devices, which are this breeding ground for cyber criminality. Not to mention these IoT hardware devices are made in foreign countries where security protocols are not very strong. So there's huge gaps for remote workers working from home, consumers, home users at home, incredibly vulnerable through IoT. Like I said, they're not attacking the IoT device. They're attacking the fridge. They're hacking the fridge to get to your computer, which is the endpoint, which is where all the goodies are, if you will. Access to your online passwords, bank accounts, sensitive information, getting to your business assets, maybe ransoming that, et cetera. All these groups, the number one thing they're really looking out going after are the endpoints. IoT devices make it much easier to get access to your endpoints, especially in the home, where there's no network. Typically, there's no network security products in the home. I mean, the wireless router and Comcast or Cox is the best that you have, which has very little security in it. Nowhere near enough to stop sophisticated criminal groups. So IoT is a big threat, and blocking the inbound threats coming off of those devices is an ongoing job and one of the reasons we built this product.
Okay, excellent. Now, the remote workforce, COVID hit us back in 2020 with a huge vengeance, and it's turned the world upside down by 50 times and right side up. And, a lot of bad things have happened from that, but there have been some good things, too. Like the remote workforce, people thought this would happen, 5 or 8 years down the road, but now we're seeing it full force, not completely. Is your company totally remote, and can eSure.ai support a full-fledged remote workforce?
You mean our workforce?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what you meant. Yeah, so one reason we built the product was to protect remote workers who are vulnerable in these remote work locations, specifically home, Starbucks, right, public Wi-Fi, whatever, which is a nightmare. So answer your question, we built it to protect remote workers. And, of course, this is a software product, so we're able to build it, deploy it, completely digitally, which is pretty amazing. So, we've got workers in all different locations throughout the globe. We have a headquarters in Phoenix, but we do have a large remote workforce, which, of course, we protect through our own products. That's one of the great advantages of operating digitally. And with all that digital operations comes all the liability that we talked about earlier.
Okay, excellent. Now, finally, data privacy laws. We talked about the GDPR, CCPA. Do you help your clients actually come to compliance with them? Do you help them, do a risk assessment survey and recommend the remediations and the controls that need to be put in place with that?
We partly do that. So our software is PCI, HIPAA compliant, GDPR, et cetera. But in terms of Privacy Act compliance, that's one of the reasons we also built this product, because if you look at the Privacy Acts, in particular, the most stringent ones that are really leading the way, the SHIELD Act in New York, and like we said, the CCPA in California, they'll go after you pretty hard if you've had a data breach of a consumer that's from those states, and there's significant financial repercussions. So we built an insurance product that insures against that, that will pay those fines if you are breached. We're that confident that you won't get breached with our platform.
Okay. This is kind of a hypothetical question, but what are your thoughts of the government forming a Department of Cybersecurity? All these data privacy laws can be one central federal law, rather than having each state, come out with their own thing and have it. I suppose business does operate in all 50 states. They have to deal with 50 different privacy laws. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, in fact, I haven't seen that. It's interesting. So, honestly, I think that makes sense, actually, because for businesses and companies like ourselves or even the end customer, small businesses, trying to figure out and navigate all of that is so incredibly complex and difficult. To be in compliance with each different state is kind of ridiculous. They've already made it hard enough on small businesses already. So to have some kind of uniformity around, privacy laws and data privacy, I think makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, excellent. Now, as we wrap up our show here, Chase, what are your thoughts about the cyber threats for next year? Is it going to be more of the same, different variants, more attacks on critical infrastructure now? This is horrible and unfortunate situation taking part in Israel. Do you think there will be more ransomware attacks in that part of the world? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and you're also seeing more cyber-related criminal activity in the Israel-Hamas event that's undergoing. You've seen some of the news on that, some of these hacktivist groups, et cetera. I always say the short answer to that is what people don't realize who are not in the industry is just the sheer volume and scale. You only hear about the ones that have been successful. It's just the sheer barrage of ongoing attacks against business, in particular small business, and now against consumers. remote workers is never ending, and it's only increasing day by day. Most people not in the industry just don't know that. So like the sheer volume of attacks that we're seeing behind the scenes is incredible. Expect that only to increase, especially with AI and automation. Of course, the bad guys have that too. Makes it, you know, ransomware as a service. It makes it easier to automate these attacks, which means they're coming for you, literally. I mean, they're coming for your small business. They're coming for you in the home as well. It's the main reason we built this. If these users, if people saw the volume of attacks that were being prevented, they would really be scared. So it's a numbers game. It's just a matter of time before they get to you and before they're successful. So I know it doesn't sound happy, but that's the kind of reality.
Yeah, that's unfortunately the way things are going, I think. But anyway, Chase, what's the best way for someone to contact you? You know, now you've got this great product out there. How can someone get a hold of you if they're interested or they want a demo? How can they reach out to you?
Yeah, thank you. It's simply the easiest one. I just go to www.esure.ai. That's where we offer the small business product and the consumer product, depending upon which audience you are. And if you're a bigger business and want to talk to us, there's lots of contact ways to contact us from that website. I'm pretty easy. It's chase@esure.ai. Those of you interested in contacting me personally, I'm always happy to discuss these matters and see how they can be helpful.
Chase, we thank you for your time and look forward to having you on a future podcast. I'd like to talk more about esure.ai as it evolves more into the marketplace.
Thanks, Robbie. Appreciate that. Thanks for having me on the show. Thanks, everybody.
Yep. Have a good evening. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you, too. Thanks.